You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.
And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-hosts, Vanana.
What's up, everybody?
And Aaron Varola.
Yo, what's up, folks? Welcome to episode 134 of the Fanboy Garage. As always, it's another week, another episode. It is so happy to have, we are so happy to have you guys with us. Holy cow, saddest episode of WandaVision yet. Just finished watching it for the second time. And we'll get into that. We've got a potential new Superman movie on the horizon. Zack Snyder drops his Army of the Dead trailer. There's some Spider-Man. Well, there is Spider-Man news, finally legit. And I guess a trailer is also supposed to be happening soon, but we'll get into that as well. But let's start where we've been starting for the past couple of weeks with WandaVision. What'd you guys think?
Oh, yeah. So this, we are now officially out of the sitcom realm, right?
Yes, we are.
And now we are... For the, I guess, the final two episodes, they're kind of bringing it all home. And this was all really backstory on Wanda, right? Giving us and how we got here from her perspective.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, we did get a little bit of a, we got Agatha's backstory, right?
At least, for a hot minute.
Yeah, but a little bit of it. And we kind of saw how she, or got hints as to how she popped up there. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And her motivations and all that. But really, it was almost like a Christmas Carol-esque deal where, like, you know, Agatha's kind of walking her through these memories of and which all lead to, you know, how we got here. So starting from when she's a little girl, right, with her brother Pietro, and we got actually some. They gave us some, they changed up some stuff, right, from Age of Ultron. Like, we actually find out some really important things which could tie in to this a conversation we've been having, which is that Wanda had her powers before she encountered the Infinity Stone, right? So,
right.
Mm-hmm. Which is big, kind of, potentially, right? Because if we are going to go down the road of mutants and things like that, we can no longer say, well, she didn't get her... We can no longer say, well, she was not a mutant because she didn't. She got her powers from the Infinity Stone. No, she didn't, actually.
Right.
She had them already. Them. Yeah, and it just amplified it. So we got to see a bit of that. And we also found out, which we figured, right, that the sitcom stuff came from her father who used it as a... Yeah, a way to kind of distract them from the mayhem that was going on. So that became like her safe place, her little like security blanket. And even the specific sitcoms that they referenced, right, in those episodes, you got to see that. So like the attention to detail is there. And another thing I thought was huge was that we got to see how she created this hex, right? And for the entire run of this show, we've been thinking that this was a way for her to avoid grieving.
Mm-hmm.
When in reality, this was a byproduct of her grieving.
Of her grief, yeah.
Her grief led to the creation of this explosion of this hex thing. And while, yes, it's a way for her now to forget about it, like the sitcoms were for her as a kid, but it was a creation of that grief. Which I thought was also interesting. So, I mean, it was a good episode. There was you know, a lot of powerful stuff in there. The stuff with Agatha is fantastic. She's amazing. You know, I mean, so that all of that is great. We also got the tease, the post-credits, mid-credit scene, whatever, of the White Vision, which is taken from the comics.
West Coast Avengers,
yeah, and Vision Quest. So, and that we'll see. We assume there's going to be that could potentially be setting up a battle between Visions, maybe in the final episode.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But you know, interesting that they're setting up. You know, we've been talking a lot about Mephisto, right, and whether Mephisto plays a role in this. And there are people that believe that ultimately Is it Hayward?
Hayward.
Is going to wind up being revealed as Mephisto. That's the new thing now. Clearly he's something, right?
He's other than he's not just, only a just a bad piece guy. Of shit, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's a shitbag, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's if he's Mephisto.
Right.
I like despise that dude. It's kind of funny. I went from like, dude, you just need to be wiped off. Like,
yeah. I mean, look, we also saw that he lied, right? I mean, she didn't totally steal his body.
He lied to her. He's lied to everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
I thought this was the best episode so far.
Wow.
And it was done very well, and I was actually crying at a lot of parts. Like, I was not kidding with my tweet, you know, the three lines that I posted when he was talking about, you know, what is grief if not love persevering, when he said, for us to grow old in, you know, on the map of the plot of land that he purchased. Yeah. And then at the very end, when he says, welcome home, Wanda, like I don't, maybe it's my hormones, but I was like a sobbing mess on my couch. Mm. And I just thought it incredible that these films, you know, like in the Marvel universe that we see as cool superhero type of films, what I think Marvel does really well, and I'll say it again and again, is that they really bring it home to your heart.
Yeah.
And Elizabeth Olsen, I think we never think of people's acting, right, in these type of movies, but she made that episode. She's the one, and along with the good writing, that made me feel so emotional in those scenes. And you really grasp the depth of grief that she has, you know, it's not just a surface component or thing that's about that particular character. When you think of Wanda, you know, you're not just like, okay, yeah, she's grieving her, but like, you really feel it. And I think that's what this episode did so well, is that you went along on that journey, like we talked about in the first episode, right? Like, we didn't know what to expect of this show. But I remember us talking about it on the first episode. We were like, yeah, I'm along for the ride, right? Like, I'm getting on this ride. I don't know where it's going. I don't know where they're going with it, but I'm in for the ride. I'm going to take it. And the ride has brought us to this really pivotal emotional point in the story. And they explain a lot. I also really love, like, one of the fictional worlds that I really just get into are like witches and magic. And to see the realm of witches and magic come into the Marvel universe in a way that is front and center.
Yeah.
Is so exciting to me. Like, when Agatha Harkness was at the very end, when she's like, what you're doing is chaos magic, you know, I was like, oh my God, like, this whole new world open up. You saw her in the beginning in like Salem. Like, these are kind of mythologies that we know. And they're bringing that into this world. It's really exciting, I think, to watch and be a part of.
And also the first reference to the Scarlet Witch as well.
Right.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. And we got to see,
which was dope. I mean, in full costume and all that stuff. That's just,
Well, I mean, just talking about, forget, I mean, not just that. You're talking about like the shadow thing that we saw, but also when she actually, this was the first time they've actually referred to her as the Scarlet Witch in the MCU, which is cool.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things you almost forget, right? Because we've been calling her Scarlet Witch, you know. Whatever.
I know, you know, we have a lot of questions, right, Aaron? I'm sure you have a lot of questions about this episode. I know you were saying that, but I thought, questions aside, those two elements really struck me this episode.
Yeah. So I was like, it was funny. So again, coming off of just watching it again, Jess, my wife, was like, damn, that was sad. I feel for her.
Yeah,
I was like, you know, you like that whole, just the culmination of everything. Like, she gets to the point, and it's where Agatha steps up and says, like, you're at the precipice. Like, let's push further. And she's like, I don't want to go there. I don't want to do this anymore. Like, you know, cause now she's really facing the memory of, you know, looking at Vision all, you know, dismantled and all of that stuff. But, God, there's so, okay. So there's so much for me to digest. Like, yeah, I absolutely love the entrance of Agatha. Like I used to go to Salem for Halloween all the time. So it's got a special place in my heart.
That's fine.
That's a great place to go. So it was cool to see that. Awesome to see her, I guess, turn on her fellow witches and essentially just suck the life force out of them, and they all die because they're old, right? They've all been around for quite a long time, so they just like get all old again and just fall apart. You know what I mean? That was cool as hell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Agatha, it's interesting because Agatha is positioned as a villain, and in the comics she's a mentor, and in this episode she mentors Wanda through a lot of her like issues, you know what I mean, like because she wants to understand how she became what she is,
right?
She also confirms that Wanda is the one who is totally controlling everyone on the outskirts of town, and that, you know, Wanda is the central architect of everything that's been happening. So I know a lot of folks thought, oh, maybe it was Agatha who was spinning things out of control, like in the reveal last episode where they say it was Agatha all along. Like, we're assuming that it was her manipulating Wanda to do all of those things, but it was really Wanda, and Agatha was trying to reveal Wanda to everybody else, like to kind of blow the lid off of the whole thing. So yeah, I thought that was super interesting. There are Easter eggs galore in that, in the episode. You know, obviously the reveal of White Vision was pretty dope. And again, Chris, you called it out. It just, you know, it goes back to the original to the Avengers, the West Coast Avengers, and the White Vision and all of that, and him not remembering anything.
Right.
The awesome thing about the sort of like the recreation of Vision within this reality is that it comes from Wanda, and if we watch it, it's yellow, so it is the essence of the Mind Stone, which I thought was really dope. So I'm excited to see how, if there's a face off between the two visions, which there is in the comics, so we'll see. We'll see how that all.
And it could be the way that we get our wish and we preserve Paul Bellamy for the future of the MCU, because it's possible that they could go with the idea that the Vision that we know, right, not the White Vision, the regular Vision, somehow can take that conscious and put it into his and become quote unquote whole again or whatever.
I mean, that's what they were saying in Infinity War, right? That there was, you know, there was Jarvis, there was Ultron, there was Tony, there was Bruce in there, and there was like all of that makes up Vision. There was, you know, there's a lot more than just the shell of the body.
And let's not forget too that Shuri supposedly has, we think, backup, right?
Yeah, potentially.
Potentially backup. We don't know if she ever got to you know, complete it, but she could have that backup, which
So
So next week, you know, is the last episode of the season.
Yeah.
And we're still supposed to get this really big cameo, right?
I call horseshit on this now, because they literally punked everybody with the Quicksilver thing. We were under the impression that this Quicksilver was plucked from another reality or another multiverse, but it doesn't seem like Agatha has the capabilities of doing such a thing. So they literally just cast Evan Peters as Quicksilver and said, "Here you go, Marvel fans, Fox fans. We're gonna give you guys a little something to chew on, but it's a complete diversion."
Mm-hmm. So you're calling BS on this?
I'm calling BS. I think that Paul Bettany's, because it's coming from Paul Bettany's, not Paul Bellamy, by the way, Chris.
Oh, did I say Paul Bellamy? Bettany. Oh, my God.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, you did.
The Paul Bettany's, because he's the one who's been saying it a lot. What if it's himself? He's never gotten a chance to act with himself.
No, someone else said it. Someone else said it too.
I feel like they're all punking us. I feel like
you think they're all punking us. I don't know because we. Okay.
It could be. I mean, I'm still going to be annoyed if the Evan Peters thing turns out to just be like, oh, haha, that was.
Gotcha. I totally feel like that's what it was.
Yeah.
And he could be just a regular dude. Who knows? Because he's still around. But if he's being controlled or manipulated by Agatha, like, was he the one that came up to Monica and said, you know, Snooper's going to snoop? Or is he free-willed? I have no idea. So we'll figure that out next
and
week.
That's the thing. For this last episode, there's a lot of ground to cover, right?
Oh, my God. And I mean, this is the point. Right. So there's like, when I watched that episode, I was like, that's great. Like, I loved the character building for Wanda. I loved all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that, it's revealed that she was superpowered before she was actually superpowered. Yeah. Loved all that. Loved even the fact that she got the vision of the Scarlet Witch in full costume. And there have been photos who have thrown that image through different lighting effects, and it's actually Elizabeth Olsen in costume. Pretty dope. Like, in a legit costume, like, not like, hopefully something we see. And actually, it's when you see the poster with their heads, and it's all the different TV boxes, and you can see their costumes in some of the TVs. It's that costume, that like maroonish thing. Makes me think maybe she actually merges with the Vision. Actually, now that I'm thinking about that. Next week's episode is going to be nuts. It's going to be the longest episode.
It's going to have to be, because, I mean, Monica Rambeau's not even in this episode. And that whole storyline, where was she? What happened to her? They also still, and I'm sorry, but they are going to have to address the Pietro thing. Literally address it, like, at some point. I'm going to be ticked, because you can't just give me that. Like, oh, we just, you know, no, sorry. Like, you got to address that.
Right.
You can't pull that shit and not call it out.
Yeah. Where did he come from?
Like, I thought we were going to get it. I thought we were going to get it when Agatha was talking about it. She's like, oh, I couldn't have gotten your brother's body, because it was like, so is it? It's a random dude it's Evan Peters. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's
he has powers, though.
Well, it was because she gave it to him.
Yeah.
It's because she gave it to him. But, like, and that's the other thing.
And his powers were more like the Aaron Taylor Johnson version of rather than the X-Men version.
The other
of
dude,
the powers.
Yeah. And then that's the other thing. So then there's theories that Wanda, in her saving her brother, when they're waiting for the bomb to go off, like, at that point she changes reality because she gives her brother powers or something like that. I don't know how he also ends up. Maybe he was also a mutant. I don't know. But how did he survive the experiments? Because they were both experimented on.
Right. How does Agatha know that, like, all the history with her and her brother?
She doesn't. She only knows that he was shot. That was it.
Yeah. So.
She was learning that from Wanda, because in the previous episodes, she's talking about her brother, and I think it's common knowledge that everyone knows that Ultron kills an Avengers sibling. You know what I mean? Like.
Okay. Okay.
Because Monica brings it up too, but Monica has also special privilege because she's a member of S.W.O.R.D., so maybe.
Yeah.
We're not meant to ask those questions.
I know. They do need to address that, though, you know.
But suffice it to say, next week's episode is going to be bananas.
Yeah.
If there was a special cameo, the only person to me that makes total sense is Doctor Strange.
Mm-hmm.
Or even, I don't know, somebody else. Because the other question mark that's kind of like, everyone's kind of like, oh, who is Jimmy Woo's person that was hiding?
The person he's looking for.
That he's looking for.
Well, see, so here I don't want to go down that road too much because we did this with Monica's person that turned out to be nothing.
Nobody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to get too caught up in that. But I mean, I would think.
It's like raised parentage.
Right. I would think that if that was somebody that was known, then he would have. He would just say who it is, right? Like, he wouldn't just, it wouldn't be like, you know what I mean? Like, it wouldn't be, like, to me, we had this conversation before when we were talking about who the Monica person was. Like, and my thing was, like, if I was talking to you about somebody that, if we were talking about Tavo, right? Somebody that we both know, I wouldn't say, hey, I'm going to go looking for somebody that's missing. I would say, hey, Tavo's missing, I'm going to look for her. You know, like, right, so right. I think it was somebody, and if it was like an Avenger or somebody like high level like that, I mean, they're not going to be missing in that town. You wouldn't think, right?
Right.
So I don't know if that's something we may not ever find out. That may just be like one of those things that's like, well, that's how he got there, but it's really not important. It's one of those lost moments again, where it's like,
yeah,
oh, the answers to all the questions aren't important. It's just kind of like how we got things here.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, trust me, like I walked out of that episode and I was like, oh, that was great. But like, damn, you didn't answer like half of the questions I had.
Right.
Like, and you actually, you know, you deepened my question. Like, why was Hayward tracking the radiation signature of Vision, a fake Vision, like a not real Vision, if you already have one?
Mm-hmm.
Why, dude? Like, yeah. And then the other thing is, and that's a whole thing about Mephisto is, how did he know that she had the power to bring him? And it's funny because he says online first and then he says back to life.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, there, yeah, okay, there's something up with you, dude, for real. Like,
yeah,
before I thought it was a throwaway, like, oh, yeah, you know, but then I'm like, how did you know that, and why did you say what you said?
So you guys are thinking that
there's gotta be something fishy with him.
As Mephisto, like, because we've been talking about this Mephisto, you know, kind of like puppet strings type of in the background for a couple episodes now. So you guys think,
I mean,
we'll see that next week.
It's the theory.
Sure, maybe.
Yeah. You know what? For all we know, Hayward is just a bad dude who winds up getting killed at the end of this next episode.
Yeah,
and that's
I know, seriously.
Like, it's again, it's another one of those things you don't want to overthink, but the general belief, and mainly because of the connection to Agatha, right? The general belief has been, and also the cosmic nature of where we're going with this phase four is that, you know, people think Mephisto might be set up as the big bad, like the overarching big bad. So people are trying to figure out where. But again, the way this show is going with the trajectory it's at, it wouldn't surprise me if we don't find that out. And the guy just is just a bad guy who had this plot and he winds up perishing, you know, Dr. Frankenstein style.
What if Hayward is Loki?
That would be something. That would be something.
It
would make sense in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd be like, oh shit, that's all. That to me would be like,
yeah.
I'm like, take all my money, Marvel. You know,
yeah.
How awesome.
Yeah.
Even if.
But I mean, we have to get. So the Monica Rambeau stuff, we didn't get any Darcy. We didn't get any of Vision, like as far as the, you know, we got Vision, but it was all right past Vision. We have the White Vision stuff. You got to set up all that. We still have to learn more about Agatha and what's going on with that, the stuff with the kids, right? All of that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot to tie up here. And also get us set up, because they've mentioned over and over again how this show was supposed to connect to Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Yeah. So at some point, something has to happen that gets us to there somehow as well. So there's a lot of ground to cover in this final episode. Almost too much in some ways, you know?
Yeah, that's my concern. And I wonder if they just leave it open. Leave some of it open, because they're like,
probably.
Dun, 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 dun. If you want to see what happens to Wanda next, check out Doctor Strange and the Multiverse.
Yeah, the only problem with that is, I mean, it's a while there's other things that are happening first.
Although that movie's filmed, I think that movie's filming.
It is, but my thing is, like, we'd have to still get through Falcon and Winter Soldier and Loki and Shang-Chi and Eternals and Spider-Man. And, like, Eternals. It's like, really, you're going to leave us on a cliffhanger that we're not going to have answered until, you know.
10 years from now.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Black Widow is still in the cut, just waiting for absolutely nothing.
I mean, when they – oh, and Black Widow. When they say connects to – I don't know that it necessarily, it doesn't necessarily mean like it's supposed to go right into, but I think it's going to open up the multiverse concept, which we're also going to see in Spider-Man, and we're also going to see probably in some way, shape, or form in the Loki show and stuff like that. So I think that I think it's probably going to lead, something is going to happen that opens up the multiverse or teases the multiverse or whatever. So we'll see. I just don't want to get too much in my head with it because I, you know, like the whole time I'm thinking, oh, when is this big cameo thing going to happen? And, you know, when is this and that and the other thing? And, you know, at first when I saw, because I didn't watch this episode till Friday night and on our Instagram page, there was that image that went up, Welcome Home Wanda, right? Which was the White Vision. But I looked at it quick and I saw it and I was like, oh no, I don't want to see that because I don't know if that's a spoiler. And for a second, without just looking for like the half a second I looked, I thought, I was like, wait a minute, is that Silver Surfer? Does Silver Surfer show up in this? I was like, because that would be amazing. But then I was like, no, I'm not going to get that in my head. And then obviously when I saw White Vision in the episode, I was like, oh, okay, that was White Vision. I get it.
Yeah.
And then I went back and looked at the full cartoon thing, and I was like, got it, that was from the book. So yeah, so I don't want to get too, I'm trying to not get too caught up in all of this
and
stuff.
we know they're they're also just twisting the shit out of things, right? Like the Agatha stuff is a twist on the character,
and they do that. I mean, they've done that
before. They do it all the time,
but I still don't, you know, there's the thought that, you know, Agatha may still not turn out to ultimately be bad, right? That she, there's a chance that they think that maybe her, Monica, and Wanda might team up by the end of this show and wind up fighting whatever the, you know,
whatever
big
the,
bad
the
thing
or
whatever
is,
turns out to be. Yeah, that would be pretty cool. So
we'll see. I mean, my only, and this is the problem now, because we've got trailers that kind of hint at like Wanda flying in the air with Vision, doing some like fighting for their home or whatever. But like Marvel has pulled so many fast moves on us in terms of trailers that I don't trust that either.
Right.
Like Thor Ragnarok, for example, like badass picture of Thor all like greased up in lightning and all of this. And he's got two eyes, but in the movie he's missing one.
Right.
You know, so they've modified a lot of shit, or they've removed people from like digitally removed people.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see.
Yeah.
Friday can't come soon enough.
Yes.
I love Fridays.
Yeah.
It's just going to keep on because we've got Falcon and the Winter Soldier in a couple of weeks.
Yep.
That's a six episode arc. Probably about 6 hours long, I think Kevin Feige confirmed.
Yeah, so far they're listing the runtimes between 40 and 50 minutes per episode,
But with their like long ass credits, it's like 5 minutes.
Yeah, what's with that?
Gotta talk about everyone that's, you know, that's dubbed the voices from every country ever.
Yeah, and now
you
that
see
they
that shit?
Yeah,
sit there waiting. I'm like, damn.
And now that they've incorporated the mid credit scene, they have these long credits because you need to get that scene cranked in the middle there. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. When the episode ended with like 10 minutes left, I was like, wow. That's a lot of credits. All right. Well, I guess speaking of credits, let's talk a little bit about Zack Snyder and the fact that not only did they drop the Army of the Dead trailer, but he also did, they had an interview during IGN Fan Fest, which I watched on YouTube. It's like 40 minutes, 45 minutes long. With him talking about the Snyder Cut, obviously. And he also aired that that clip, like the origins of the mother box origins thing, which is pretty cool from like an artistic perspective. A bunch of little Easter eggs, Tom Waits playing over it and stuff like that, which is cool. I mean, I know where you want to start. You want to start with the Army of the Dead thing or the Justice League thing and some of that stuff?
I mean, we can quickly breeze through Army of the Dead. I mean,
yeah.
Awesome trailer.
Yeah, the trailer's cool.
Great trailer.
Awesome trailer.
Yeah.
I'm signed up. Let's do it.
Yeah. It hits on everything
Zombies,
you need.
Dave Bautista.
Absolutely. Action. Vegas.
Yeah. Yeah. The guy that played Ghost in Power. Don't even know his name.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's in that shit.
Oh, shoot. He's such a good actor.
He's really good.
He's
really
so good.
His Spanish, though, is horrible.
Okay, I wouldn't know.
It's so bad.
Well, actually, I would. I'm freaking from Queens.
Yeah, it's so bad.
You know, this show just looks... It looks bananas, and like Batista looks bananas, you know? And when you think about zombies, I think like in the recent years, we've gotten pretty much like quieter versions, you know, like quieter type of shows where like it's the apocalypse and like it's just quiet out in the world, right? But this one is like, it just hits you from the moment you play the trailer. It just looks crazy.
Yeah.
So I really like that about it.
I just want to know where they plan on spending the money.
Well, yeah, that's what I tweeted. I was like, where are you going to spend that?
Yeah.
Maybe America is zombified, but they can't swim across. Yeah. They can't swim across the ocean to other to like Europe or something.
Maybe there's some commentary. I mean, the original Dawn of the Dead, the George Romero version, was a social commentary, right? As was Night of the Living Dead, but the Dawn of the Dead was a social commentary on consumerism, right? Mm-hmm. Which is why it takes place in a shopping mall and the idea that people are, you know, shopping malls, the whole mindless thing, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So Zack Snyder's remake of Dawn of the Dead, as cool as it was and as good as it was, left that out, kind of. It didn't focus as much on that concept, but maybe there's some social commentary here to this one. And that we'll find out to dealing involving money.
A deconstruction of zombies. Love it.
As you're dealing with this apocalypse, we're worried about where we're going to spend our money. That would actually be.
Yeah. And it takes place in like Vegas, you know, money excess.
Yeah. There we go. So, when I showed you guys that text, I love that the Elvis, obviously because Elvis in Vegas, but there's an Easter egg there because of Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
Where they are picking people off in the parking lot and they go, go after Elvis. Is it Elvis? It is an Elvis looking guy, right? That they shoot in the head in Dawn of the
Dead? I think so.
Or did Jay Leno or something like that? I forgot what it is. Forgot what it was.
Not Jay Leno.
No. Jay Leno.
Maybe it was Elvis. I don't remember.
Wow.
So, yeah, it looks badass.
Yeah.
Sign me up. Cool. Is it a movie or a show?
Netflix.
Army of the Dead is a movie, right? Yeah.
Oh.
It's a movie or a show?
I'm pretty sure it's a movie. Yeah.
Cool. Is it 4 hours long?
No, it's
I thought it was episodic.
No, it's a movie. It's a, because it was, they announced it as, like this was going to be his first, without knowing the Snyder Cut was going to be a thing. This was going to be his first movie. Yeah, it's a movie. The budget was like $70 to $90 million. It's pretty good, right? For a zombie, basically like an action zombie movie.
I wanted a show.
There's too many of those. You got to make it a movie.
I have a feeling that
The Walking Dead.
I have a feeling that this movie,
new season of that,
the way this. The way that trailer looks, it looks so just kind of batshit crazy that it's probably just going to be like a fun zombie movie. But let's move over to Justice League for a second, because I did. Sure. Did you see the interview that he
did? I did not.
Okay, good. So it's really a lot of more of the same. Yeah.
Good. Yeah, you guys suck.
Yeah. It's more.
I did my homework.
It's more of the same. Right. Mm-hmm. Nothing really revolutionary came out of it, except some of the things we've actually talked about. Right. Because we were wondering if there were going to be points in this movie where you could stop it and pause it and have it. He actually said it's chaptered. So there are going to be points, like he's like the opening is like, you know, whatever. And then chapter two is like the age of heroes or something like that. And like, so there are points, he said, where you'll be able to get up and go to the bathroom, stretch, or go for popcorn or stretch or whatever. So like, he gets it. And the runtime is, he said, it's like a couple of minutes over 4 hours with titles and all of that stuff. So he talked about that. He talked about how the original cut, they asked him like, how much of this movie is what you were going to, like, is what you actually put together in 2017. He said most of it. Like, there's new stuff, obviously, that he added in just to kind of shift stuff. But he goes, a lot of that stuff was not, he goes, the majority of this film is what I did then. You know, and he even mentioned that, like, the thing is going to kind of end on a cliffhanger in a sense, where, like, you are going to, because we know that he was building to something bigger.
Right.
And, you know, maybe still.
And then he's like, well, HBO Max.
Yeah.
If you get enough people, he's like, I'm always available. Yeah.
Basically.
Make the second Justice League.
Yeah.
Movie, which was like trending today on Twitter.
Yeah. So it was a lot of. He also talked about how he. There's a black and white version of this movie that he says is the best way to watch it. He thinks. He think because there's a. He says this, like in IMAX, on like an IMAX screen in black and white, he said is actually the way he would love for everybody to see it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And he kept it in, what, a 4:3 ratio?
Well, he did it in, not 4:3, so 4:3 is like what the old TVs used to be, the box TVs. Right. It's IMAX is 1:3:3 or 1:4:3 is their aspect ratio, right? Gotcha. So as opposed to like two, widescreen, like cinematic widescreen is like 2.15 or 2.10, and then regular widescreen is like 1.78 or 1.85, which is what, like, will fit a home, but then IMAX takes it even. It's 1.3 or 1.43.
Yeah, so I think he kept it in the ratio for IMAX.
He did. Yeah, he filmed it. He didn't use IMAX cameras, but he actually used the aspect, the IMAX aspect ratio. I mean, I don't know about IMAX. The black and white. You hate IMAX?
I can't watch IMAX. I've watched it's too much. I've watched two IMAX movies and I've thrown up. The movie, each time I just that visual light.
Was it IMAX 3D stuff? Or regular IMAX?
Forget 3D. You want me to like be in the emergency room?
No, I don't.
No, it was regular. And then I think there was one time I wanted to see Resident Evil IMAX 3D. But I like walked out before it even started.
You're probably better off anyway.
Because I just knew, like, I was like, nope, this is not happening.
I have actually never seen a movie on a true IMAX screen. Like, there's a lot of screens in New York City that claim to be like their IMAX because they have IMAX ratio and they're slightly bigger. But there's only like a couple of true IMAX screens in New York. But what I like about
it, it's a New Rochelle.
Right, New Rochelle has one.
Lincoln Square.
Yep. What I like about IMAX is that when you watch it at home, you don't get letterboxing on your TV because it actually is made to fit. The aspect ratio fits the entire screen, which is kind of cool. That's why, like, if you remember The Dark Knight, when they released it on Blu-ray, they released it where it actually flipped aspect ratios on you, which is a little weird. So the stuff
there were like six.
Yeah, it's not a lot. The stuff he shot in IMAX fills your screen and then it goes back to letterboxing when you watch that Blu-ray. But, I mean, I don't know about the black and white thing because him and I have this one disconnect about what we love about superheroes. And to me, color is one of those things. Like, I like the colors and the things. And he seems to not be a fan of colors because even in color, he muted the colors, right? So it kind of I guess it doesn't really fit his vision. But I do like the Mad Max Fury Road. What would they call it, like black and chrome or whatever that black and white edition was of that looked really awesome and was cool.
Logan
in black and white, amazing. So I'd certainly give that a shot if it's good in black and white.
Sin City.
Well, Sin City was kidding. Yeah. But
a great movie.
Yeah, absolutely. I liked it. Yeah. But
I love Sin City.
I don't know about the black and white thing. I'm with you there. I think they need to be in color.
It's, yeah, I mean, I don't, again, without having seen his version of the movie, but yeah, I mean, other than that, it was a lot of your standard stuff. Like, you know, he mentions how Cyborg's the heart and soul of the movie, and, you know, they just, you know, nothing really revolutionary other than those couple of little, you know, tidbits and stuff like that. So, but yeah, I mean, it's, you know, there was a really great article in Vanity Fair about the entire process, like going back to 2017 now, that really gives a lot of detail on everything that went down. And it's really well done and really insightful, gives a lot of, you know, so you start to look at things and, you know, I find myself, I mean, I'm just more and more into this movie now. And I think a big reason for it is just the fact that I'm ready. Like, I'm ready for a big superhero film. I mean, I said it before, like, you know, I mean, just because, you know, I didn't like BVS doesn't necessarily mean I'm not going to like this. Just because I didn't like the theatrical Justice League doesn't mean that I'm not going to like this, because that was just a mess. And I would like, you know, hopefully having, if again, my bigger issue with this direction for these heroes was that I didn't want to have to live with these versions of those characters for 20 movies or 10 movies, 5 movies. But as a standalone little story that exists on its own, I could certainly be into that, because then it becomes kind of like an Elseworlds tale or a specific story that you're telling, as opposed to a shared universe. And that context changes everything, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just typical with any art, right? The context oftentimes can shift how you view it. So I think now, looking at it with 2021 eyes and in the context of what it is now, that's kind of changed my excitement level and my perception of the whole project, really.
Yeah, I'm willing to, I mean, obviously I'm interested to see what this version looks like. I think for me, my biggest qualms with his approach is that his view, same thing you said, is his view on superheroes is very different than the way that I see them.
Right.
And it's, I don't want to say it's a misunderstanding, but it's a very tainted and cynical view of superheroes that I don't know if I'm not going to say there isn't a place, because there's a place for everything, and it's art, so it is what it is.
Yeah.
But
it's a specific view, that's for sure.
Right. Yeah. And the thing is, I hold these specific heroes like to a very different standard. And so that's an opinion thing. That's like my personal taste. You know, I think that in looking, and I appreciate the fact that this is going to be a story in a vacuum kind of thing, very much like the way Joker was, but like Todd Phillips and the writers of Joker fundamentally understood everything. They understood the DNA of Joker. The story may have been very different, and there is really no story, but they understood like madness. They understood that they could bend reality as they were shaping this film. And I feel like that's sort of the ownership that Snyder is trying to take with some of these things. And there are some things that you just can't,
can I piggyback on that?
Yeah.
Because I feel like we've been kind of on the same page with like Justice League and why we felt this sort of like hesitancy, you know, or like not that 100% level of excitement for this, is because of his view. And I feel like he, even with the way it's shot and the colors that are used, he sees these figures as gods, as mythological figures. They are like above us. And it's really hard to grasp and relate to that type of story when there is a disconnect. Right? Because even if they're gods and mythological figures like above us, if we're watching it, we need to find something to connect to. And
sure.
for me, that's where I see the disconnect. I hate the way it's shot. Like, it's probably going to be maybe an okay story or an interesting story or whatever, but I have a problem with the way that it looks. I don't like it. I don't like it.
He even says that he's got like a fetishistic sort of approach to, like, yeah. He's obsessed with, and he admits this, with ancient gods, which we know. Yeah. I mean, it's a thing that he likes, and he chose to use this story, right? And it's not original just to him. I mean, it's that whole, like, Injustice Gods Among Us thing from, like, the video right. games and stuff. Yeah. Like, it's been introduced before, and that was popular at the time when they decided to make this movie. And you also got to remember, in context, too, like, the Superman that existed in the comics in the New 52 was kind of a dour, angry, kind of miserable Superman. He wound up being unpopular and ultimately being kind of, they brought back the original Superman eventually, but, like, mm-hmm. this was what was going on in DC at the time. So it's not all mm-hmm. Zack Snyder. I mean, this is yeah. one of my big issues with, like, studio interference, right? Is that right. they kind of guided to this path because that's where, but then got panicky because they saw the reviews yeah. and stuff, and then went like, no, we don't want this.
It wasn't making the money that they wanted. Correct. To make. That's that. I mean, ultimately, it was like,
yeah,
they gave him total control. With that control, was making movies that he wanted to make, and they got scared and stole it back from
sure.
him.
Sure.
Like, and I hope I'm wrong. You know, I hope that the story in what we're gonna see next month is gonna grasp you. You know, just like how people, yeah. if he's into mythology and, you know, stories of gods, and that's where it came from, and people have been reading those stories for centuries because we can relate to them, they come down to us, try and be like us,
sure.
then you have a really good bridge there. You have a good story. So I think just the way it looks is making me feel like it's not connected. Does that make any sense?
I love his style. Like, I love his visual style.
Yeah, me too.
Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I love that shit. Like, when it's I watch 300, I'll never forget sitting in the theater with, like, a bunch of my fraternity brothers and being like, yo, what is this? And we're, holy shit. Because we're Lambdas. And they had, like, you know, the Spartans had Lambdas on their shields. And mm-hmm. Anyways. So we got all hyped for that. And, you know, Watchmen is very similar to what, like, it's normal people stylized. To a certain extent.
Yeah.
Having being superheroes, but also being fundamentally flawed.
But that's a theme of Watchmen, though, right? Of
the story. Right. 100%. And that's the thing. I think 300 sticks to the script. Watchmen sticks to the script. And now he's taking heroes that, yes, they are gods among us, and bending it. And to your point, Chris, yes, it was a very popular storyline in some other media, but, like, bending these characters and, like, fracturing them through light, what they actually are to us and what they mean to us, and mm-hmm. and I struggle with that portrayal of those characters. It was like the comment that he made about Wonder Woman's outfit, like, oh, you know, the red on her outfit is like all of her slain enemies. I'm like, bro, what are you talking about?
Yeah, but mm-hmm. that was kind of there was a Wonder Woman comic in the New 52 that was bloody, right? And it was it was more of like that, like it, but, you know, again, it was the time, the context, but also, you know, the superhero to me, like, it's key when you're doing these superhero movies, like, the key is the universal themes, right? So these are extraordinary stories and extraordinary characters. So it's your universal themes that are going to connect with the audience, right? The things that transcend race, right? Ethnicity, gender, you know, cultural backgrounds, geographical location, right? They're just themes like love, good versus evil, redemption, things that everybody can relate to. Doesn't matter where you come from, doesn't matter, you know, what your background is, wherever. Those are the things that everybody can relate to, right? When it comes to art mm-hmm. and when it comes to these characters. And I think that that's what he was trying to accomplish with the Martha thing, right? In a way, right? But, and it was something that he did with in Man of Steel, with making it a, like, a first contact story there was a universal theme there of acceptance and being an outsider,
right.
and being an right. outcast, and or not being being afraid to be what you really are because you right. think there's going
and
be scorn about
whether or not
that.
You want to help people.
Correct, because mm-hmm. you're afraid mm-hmm. that who you are might actually bring you scorn. These are universe. These are things that people can relate to easily. So yeah, they were going for a lot of that. A lot of that stuff. And it certainly resonated with a lot of people. It didn't resonate with everybody. Really? And it didn't resonate for the studio's taste with enough people. And they hit the panic button again. But now here we mm-hmm. are. But now in this little bubble that we can view this in a new context, I think it does, it takes on a whole new thing. And we'll see where it goes from here. You know, he said multiple times in that interview, like, I don't expect this to continue on, but I think deep down people do hope that it might continue on at least for one more project. I mean, I don't know it, you know, if you, it's a lot to ask for. It's one thing to give him whatever it was, $70 million or whatever, to kind of complete this version and do reshoots and whatnot. It's another thing to invest $200-300 million, whatever, right. into a movie that,
and I was going to say, and the reason why this happened is because he did it for free.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's bringing the Snyder Cut to everyone for free. He didn't get paid for this.
I enjoy the story behind it. Like, I would love to see the documentary.
Yo,
I think
I'm telling you,
more than I'm excited to see, like, the final product, I guess.
Yeah.
But that's because I know nothing. So don't come at me.
Well, that's also, right? That's one of the things that originally fascinated me about the whole idea of the Snyder Cut from way back when was because I love stuff like that. I love that behind the scenes stuff, these types of stories mm-hmm. where directors have movies taken from them and then things get messed up and like stuff like that. As a film fan, I love it. I eat it all up. Yeah. I could watch documentaries mm-hmm. and read books about that stuff forever. It's just we lived through this one, you know, and we haven't lived through a lot of, like, you know, like I lived through the Tim Burton Superman thing, but like the world was very different back then, and you really didn't know. Of course, there was no social media, no internet, nothing. So all of that stuff happened, and you kind of knew sort of if you read like certain magazines and things like that, but like you really didn't know. So this is a very different thing. But one thing I will say, speaking of interpretations of heroes and whatnot, is Superman and Lois debuted this past week. And I ate that up. I loved it.
Boss.
I have fallen off of the CW shows in the last mm-hmm. year or so. Mm-hmm. But this one... I'm going to be sticking with it. I liked almost everything about this. I loved how it was. So his Superman is cool, but his Clark is fantastic. And I loved how this version of the character or portrayal of the character was a combination of like so many different elements of Superman over the years that I, and all of the good one, all of the good things from the different interpretations of the character kind of like all come together. Right. Love that. Love the plot with the kids and, you know, with Smallville playing a big role and the little subplots and all that stuff. This might be my favorite suit, live action suit.
Yeah, that's it's a badass.
It's a fantastic suit.
And I'll tell you, for a CW show.
Yeah.
That suit is top notch.
It's a significant improvement over the one that he had previously. Yeah. Right. And it looks great. It's, again, it takes a lot of the best elements from the different suits that we've seen through the years.
I mean, the only thing I'll nitpick the shit out of a suit too, though.
The muscle thing.
I don't like the high.
Oh, the high.
High
really?
Keep tucked in there. That's like the way I used to dress when I was a kid playing Superman, and you tuck that shit in your t-shirt, little
red
towel.
Where would you want it?
It needs to be on the shoulders somewhere. It needs to be like, or on the neck, on the back of the neck, but like not tucked in. Like, shit, man, like look at that picture that you have up, Chris. Like that's not comfortable. What is that?
See that?
Does not look comfortable.
I don't like that. It reminded me of the Ralph suit, which I absolutely despise. It was the same thing. And no, there was a lot with the Ralph suit that I didn't like. But like that one thing is like, but anyways, suffice it to say, it's still a, I like the other parts of the
scene. And the effects, especially for a CW show, are pretty good. And
top notch.
And you know, it's set up some interesting, you know, plot stuff for, you know, where the show might be going and stuff like that. And it's very much a Superman show, which is cool because it's been a while since we've had one of those. But it's more to it. It's more than just a Superman show. But at the same time, it's still very much a Superman show. Like, it's not dancing around being a Superman show. You know, it's not a, a family drama. And every once in a while, there's some Superman stuff. Like, it's both at the same time.
I was pleasantly surprised. I wasn't particularly excited about this show. If anything, I thought, oh God, another, you know, Superman story. But I really liked it. I thought it was done really well. I thought they brought in a different perspective. I'd love to see him struggling to be a dad and Superman. I think seeing him in the lens of being a father and having two kids, and also how different they both are, and how one brother is struggling particularly, you know, more than the other, and the questions that get raised between him and Lois, like, do we tell them?
Right.
You know, like, these ideas and these obstacles that he has to go through, I found that, like, oh, you know, I've never seen that before. I really like it.
Yeah. I enjoy that part. I'll say though that the Jordan, is that his name?
Jordan's the one with the powers right now.
Yeah, he's annoying as shit.
The kid?
He's so annoying. Yeah, that kid is so annoying. And aww, he's just like, I don't know. He just, some of the acting was a little like, okay. I get it. You're just like the awkward dude. I got you. You don't have to be like every time he's on the screen. It's like, you don't know, I don't like my skin. I don't like myself and my body. But I don't like, whatever.
the girl's really good too. And she's really cute.
Yeah. I thought that was cool. I like that part where, you know, where he goes and makes the move on the girl. Cause I think everyone, I was like, what? She was teasing you, bro. I'm like, what? Going around with the balls now. and I like the fact that him and his brother, like, his even though his brother's a dick, his brother always has his back.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Because that reminds me and my brother, like, I could be a dick, but like, you mess with my brother, yo, I'm going to war. Like, I'm going to mess you up. So, like, right. I loved that. And I did like seeing, because that is the humanity of being, you know, like, on Earth for Clark is your parent, and you got to now deal with all this shit and two different kids. You can't raise them the same way. Like, I know all about that. So, and then you layer in the fact that he's Superman. Like, I love how that feels versus, like, again, going back to Superman Returns, which is, you know, he disappears for 5 years or whatever, and then he comes back.
Yeah.
And then Lois is like, you have a kid. Like, you've been a deadbeat dad for 5 years, Superman. Like, what's going on?
Right. It's also nice to get a show where, because usually it's like the superhero is like front and center, and then everyone else is just periphery, right? Like, their stories are just kind of there to support the main person. This is nice that you are getting a glimpse into his son's lives.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a separate storyline all in itself, you know, that adds together because they're family. But it's nice to see those type of struggles and how his son, they thought he was just struggling from like a mental disorder. But it can possibly be because he's like getting these powers and he feels like an alien, just like his dad in high school and going through all of these emotions, and his body's probably developing differently. So I thought that was a very interesting point of view to bring into something where you, like, my initial reaction was a little bit of like, all right, here we go, you know? So they made it fresh. It's a fresh batch of juice.
Yeah. And there's some touching moments for sure in that show.
Yeah. What do you guys think of Lex Luthor as
Captain?
Well, Captain Luthor.
Lex, Captain Luthor.
Captain Luthor.
Captain Luthor.
So now, technically, this show is this takes place in the Arrowverse, right? Which means John Cryer is Lex Luthor.
John Cryer is Superman. I mean,
is Lex Luthor. So that means that Captain Luthor is going to be something else. We don't know what it's going to be yet.
Son, whatever. The other thing is, this is in the future of the Arrowverse, right? So, and actually, technically, Lex, John Cryer is Superman. John Cryer is Lex Luthor. Jumped.
We need a T-shirt.
He jumped into that universe. He wasn't
true, but. Yeah,
he wasn't
supposed
to be there.
Right.
I don't remember. Whatever. We'll see how it all plays out. All
right.
If it gets wonky, I'll drop it like a bad habit.
It's pretty good. Love that I downloaded the CW app and can watch it for free.
There
That's
you go.
Awesome.
Yes. And like the commercials are like not bad at all.
No, not bad at all.
No. Great. Yeah. Cool. So, all right. So, and obviously.
Well, we'll stay with Superman.
Yeah, more Superman news. So, Warner Brothers announced that J.J. Abrams is going to be producing a new Superman movie, and Ta-Nehisi Coates is going to be writing, at least taking a crack at writing it, and that it most likely is going to lead to a black Superman. Right character, that's at least none of that's been like official yet. I mean, the Ta-Nehisi Coates part has been, yes, clearly, and the J.J. Abrams part, but yeah. So you know, now of course, you know, everything's running rampant as far as like, you know, what is this going to be? Is it going to be like a? Is this going to be the new Superman in film? Is it going to be a side project deal? You know, a lot of back and forth on.
They
that.
Have the multiverse, like they don't
of course.
Need to.
I mean, I'm assuming they're going to do probably the Calvin Ellis storyline, right? Calvin Ellis, who was introduced, I think, in 2012, something like that, into the DC universe. He played a character who was the Superman of, I want to say maybe like Earth 23 or something like that, and he was also the president, which is interesting, and he was kind of drawn. In similar kind of a likeness to like President Obama, right at the time. And so the thought is maybe that's where they're going with this. Maybe not that exact storyline, but and the character is going to be coming back supposedly into, if he hasn't already, into the DC Comics universe this year. So you would think that's not a coincidence, right? If that would happen. Ta-Nehisi Coates is a brilliant guy. Some of his theories and stuff are fascinating, whether you necessarily agree or disagree with some of his opinions on things or whatever. The writing itself and the theories are interesting. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes with this. There really hasn't been – it's funny. I have not seen at least a lot of talk. I know Ron Diesel asked us about whether we – you know, whether – I haven't – again, I haven't really been all over social media as much, at least on Twitter. But, like, I haven't seen a lot of talk. I mean, I did see some speculation as to, like, whether, you know, Henry Cavill will be back. Does it mean he's not going to be back? Like, whatever this – what does this mean for that? But, like, other than that, I haven't really seen a lot of reaction to this.
Yeah, not
yeah. I think it's too early to tell.
Yeah.
You know, like until more news.
Well, it hasn't
comes
stopped
out.
Anybody before, but yeah.
No.
That's true, but yeah. I don't know. We're kind of in like this weird. I think everyone's feeling it. Yeah. Where even watching the Golden Globes tonight, like everyone's energy. Is a little bit
everyone's over it.
Yeah.
We're just so like beat down and tired that even in the pre-show of the Golden Globes I was watching, like Jane Lynch is hosting with someone else and they were just horrible. And it's nothing to them, but maybe that's why people aren't going rah-rah, because everyone's just
it
a
could
little
be.
Bit tired.
I also think maybe we've had so many like false starts.
Yeah.
With a lot of these things.
Especially in the DC camp.
Yeah, that people are almost like, well, let's, when we have something, like, give me an actor, give me a title, give me a full finished concept, and then we'll release it.
And then the thing is, with J.J. Abrams producing, Is this going to be like a straight to HBO Max type feature?
Well, you know,
they inked that deal with
I'm Warner glad Media? You mentioned that, because I was thinking about that today, because I was like, you know, they made a big deal about that Bad Robot production deal with Warner Media, and how a lot of that was going to lead to content for HBO Max. And but they don't mention at all what this project is for. So I was wondering the same thing. Like, is this going to wind up being like a limited series on HBO Max? Is it going to be a theatrical movie? Maybe they don't know yet. Who knows what the world's going to be like if and when you figure this is a movie that you're just starting to write. You're talking a few years out, probably. So who knows? I mean, there's just so much, I guess, to speculate on.
series. I love series.
So, we'll see what happens with that. And there also was some Spider-Man news, kind of. So, well, not kind of. There was Spider-Man news. Originally, it started out with some teases, right? Each of the three main cast members sent out on their social media a false title card with different names and different color schemes and whatnot. And then it led to the next day, the official announcement that it's called Spider-Man No Way Home. So they're continuing in the home theme, right? Homecoming, Far From Home, and now No Way Home. And now apparently it's being released on Christmas Day, which it was supposed to be released December 17th. But the one image that I saw said Spider-Man No Way Home, only in theaters on this Christmas, it said. Only in theaters this Christmas. So now, does that mean that maybe they're saying, well, it'll be in theaters for Christmas even if it comes out December 17th, or did they merely move it to Christmas? I don't know. They haven't officially put the date up yet, but apparently it is going to only be in theaters, according to Sony. And we got some little stills of some scenes and brief video and stuff like that. We're going to be getting a trailer soon, I guess. So,
I'm excited. They were clearly all excited. I love those three. Actors. They're great. And they're fake, phony baloney title cards were hilarious.
Yeah,
like Spider-Man Home Slice, Spider-Man Homewrecker. Spider-Man Phone Home, like,
That one was my favorite.
That was cute. The interesting thing was, like, the colors that they were using, which everyone's like, oh, God, the colors are looking like Norman Osborn's Green Goblin and all that. I, like, honestly, WandaVision has my brain spinning in Theoryville, so I can't even, like, I just know that it's going to be a big movie. It's a Spider-Man movie. It's a movie now that's going to, again, continue to reshape what we know and think of the MCU. So that shit's got a lot of stuff. It's got a lot of boxes it needs to check. So I'm not gonna go nuts.
Yeah.
I just need a trailer. That's it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Give me a teaser.
Yeah, and we also got word that the Loki series debuts June 11th. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And Star Wars, the new animated series, Bad Batch, debuts on Star Wars Day, May the 4th, on Disney Plus. And also there's going to be DC announced a Blue Beetle film in production, which would be the first Latino superhero movie.
Excellent.
Yeah. So that's going to be we'll see, like anything else. We'll have to see where that goes.
Technically, Miles Morales was, but sure. Okay, I'll take it.
No, but Blue Beetle goes back before Miles Morales.
No, I'm just saying.
Oh, you're talking about because of Into the Spider-Verse?
Sure.
Sure, yeah. I get they mean live action.
Sure.
Yeah. And, of course, New York City movie theaters, for those who care from the air, open this coming Friday, from when you're hearing this, March 5th, a limited capacity, 25%. Which is interesting because there's some stuff coming out, and you know, I was looking at the box office numbers, and I know I didn't even pay attention to it, but Vanana sent us a text about this Tom and Jerry, which I didn't realize. I knew it was on HBO Max. I didn't even realize it was in theaters
simultaneously
had the second biggest opening weekend in the pandemic era. It debuted to 37 It debuted to $13.7 million Which is second only behind Wonder Woman 84's 16 million here. But that was only on like 45% of theaters open at limited capacity. Which is not bad. So, I mean, there still is an audience for this stuff and an appetite for this. And the thing is, you know, I was thinking about it the other day, and I blame WandaVision for this, to be honest with you. And I think, Aaron, you and I spoke about this, the fanfare at the beginning, the Marvel thing. That little moment has me excited to get back to movie theaters again. Because that, the lights coming down and that coming on the screen, like that's, it brings me right back to that feeling of being in the theater, like on the big screen, isolated in that moment. And it gave me this, it gives me that feeling of like, I need that again, you know? Yeah. So I'm actually kind of excited if and when, for the right movie, of course, to get back into the theater experience. Whereas, and I've been, obviously everyone knows who listens, I've been the biggest proponent of watching movies at home. And I'm one of the leaders in the watch movies from home, give me the option to watch it at home movement. But even I am ready at this point to get back to theaters for, like I said, the right films. Not every film, but the right film. Just to have that experience again. Because that part I miss, so.
Yeah.
And you gotta wear a mask the whole time, right?
Yeah, but you know what?
They say not when you're seated.
Well, in New York you do, I think.
But
we'll see. I'm okay. You know what? I could do that. I mean, you get the right mask. Like, I have this.
Unless you're, like, eating and drinking, but I don't even think they're rolling that out yet, so.
No. I had this Marvel mask, cotton mask, that somebody made. That she sells them. She made them. They're really awesome. I probably put it up on Instagram at some point, or Facebook too, in the next couple days to promote it. But it's like the most comfortable mask that I've ever worn in all this time. Like, I could easily sit in a theater with that on, probably for not for 4 hours, not for 3 hours, but for, you know, a couple of hours, I could probably do it.
I'm going to make a mask that looks like Baron Zemo's mask. Purple skull.
Yeah. Thing. But I'm actually thinking, like, get back to theaters once we don't have to worry about that. Whatever that means. I don't know what that means. I don't know when that's going to be, whatever. But that'll be when I want to go back to enjoy, you know, enjoy. It'll be a while anyway, I think, before there's... because I'm going to enjoy watching some of these movies at home for a little while, starting in a few weeks, as they start to, Warner Brothers starts to roll out their slate on HBO Max. So
yeah, it's really sad what happened to theaters, because I know in Singapore they just rolled out like a really, really solid contact tracing program, you know, and had all of these things in place, and they can enjoy the movies. So having it come back with this feeling of like, it didn't really have to happen this way, is exciting for sure.
Yeah. So we'll see how that goes. I think that's pretty much it, right? I mean, we kind of ran through all the big stuff. Yeah. Next week, we'll be talking about the finale of WandaVision.
Yeah,
so I'm sure there's going to be a lot to dig into there. And I mean, look, it's been, now that, you know, we're starting to get a lot of news again, you know, now that things are back into production and things are, they can confidently start to announce things and stuff like that. We've had a few weeks now in a row where just news starts flying, you know, is flying out there, and it's good. It's nice actually to be talking about that stuff again. So, you know, who knows what next week will bring, but we know it will bring the finale of WandaVision. And I'm going to miss that show.
Yeah.
You know, obviously it's not a show that's going to come back, you know, I mean, at least not in this form, you know, for a second season. So, which is, it's unfortunate, but, yeah, it was a fun ride. So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you one thing though. It definitely like raises the bar for my expectations of these Marvel shows on Disney Plus. So, you know, and we did talk about this last week, but I definitely felt like there was going to be way too much content to keep up with. And I'm like, there's no way they can keep that quality going.
Yeah.
And I'm wrong. Pleasantly wrong. I'm glad that I'm wrong. Because yeah. This show is, I want to tune in. I want to know everything there is to know about it. I want to know how it's going to fit in with all of the other movies and content that they are creating.
Yeah.
Also, there was a MODOK, by the way, a MODOK trailer that dropped. It's an animated.
Or like I saw that.
Stop motion type show. It kind of looks like it. I don't know if it is stop motion. It looks like it, but it's Marvel's like show on Hulu. That looks like fun.
Yeah.
For the kiddies out there.
Yeah, there's, I mean, I agree. It's interesting that, you know, I think they're going to be using the Disney Plus to tell these side stories that they're not going to make movies for, but they're doing it in movie like quality with movie budgets, movie scope.
Yeah.
These aren't just like side throwaway stories that like you're forced to watch just because like, it's like, oh crap, am I going to have to watch all this to keep up? It's like, man, I can't wait till like, this is now all part of this exciting universe. And it's like, you're just as excited, if not more excited, to watch these shows than you are to go see these movies. This year, I'm probably going to be more excited to watch the shows than I am the movies. Because I'm not super excited about Black Widow. Shang-Chi, even though it checks off a lot of boxes for me, I can't say I'm like super excited for that movie. Like I could very well love it and I'll probably be interested. I'm going to be interested in seeing it, but like I'm not like losing my mind excited over it. Eternals, got nothing for that. And then Spider-Man, I'm pumped for. But so like for me, this year is going to be about for Marvel, it's going to be about the TV shows. It's going to be, I'm pumped for Falcon and Winter Soldier. WandaVision, I had no expectations for. It's blowing me away. I'm excited for the Loki show. So, yeah.
I was just going to say, even just thinking back at our conversations, you know, when I joined, like, 6 months ago, talking about theaters and how these shows are going to look on these platforms. We've come such a long way and adapted so well that we're like looking forward to and excited about it. And it's just, we adapt.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all of these shows and movies are making me broke because I'm buying up first appearances and issue one. So it's bad.
Like, it was hard enough to keep up with the movies. Now you got to keep up with the shows too.
Like the books and stuff like that. Yeah, and all that good stuff. But like, you know, I listen to a whole bunch of geek people and folks in the fandom talking about stuff. And, you know, some folks are talking about the Eternals and Marvel is insiders are saying that Marvel is like super delighted by the film.
Mm-hmm.
That it's like the best movie they've ever produced.
Mm. Wow.
And like me hearing that, I was like, I got to give myself Eternals number one.
I wonder if she's going to win an award tonight. She's nominated.
Yeah. I heard the
director of Eternals.
Director of the Eternals, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And there's an Easter egg in Nomadland where the main character, Frances McDormand, she walks by a theater and in the marquee, it's playing The Avengers.
That's mad funny.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Because when she was directing this movie, she was working on Eternals. She thought like in all her research and everything, she's just so excited about the MCU. And so she just decided, what name am I going to put on the marquee? And she just chose Avengers because she thought it was perfect. And it was also perfect for her character, who is kind of like out of touch with the real world.
Mm.
So for such a big movie like The Avengers to be playing and she's looking up at the marquee like, what movie is that? It's like everyone knows, you know, Avengers, but she didn't. So that's like a cool little like Easter egg melding of the indie world and the MCU. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. That's wild. And that MODOK show, by the way, is a stop motion.
It is, right? And it looks sharp. It looks good. It reminds me of Robot Chicken.
Yeah, Patton Oswalt is Jordan Blum, and Patton Oswalt created it, and Patton Oswalt plays MODOK. And
I like him.
Yeah, that's on Hulu. All right.
Cool.
All right.
Let's skedaddle.
Yep.
Let's close the garage.
All right. So, of course, you can check out thefanboygarage.com and check out our episodes and our merch. You can join the conversation on the social medias, the Facebook, the Instagram, and the Twitter at thefanboygarage. And, of course, go to our YouTube channel and check out our videos. You can like, subscribe, hit the notification button, all that fun stuff to help us and support the show on YouTube. And of course, you could find me on Twitter at RealCLMighty.
You guys can find me at banana_TFG. Let me know what's on your mind.
And you can always find me at A_A_RonSpeaks on Twitter. Thank you so much for listening to episode 134 of the Fanboy Garage. As always, it is a pleasure that you came and joined us. You watched us. You listened to us. But now you got to wait till next week. See ya.
You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.